Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 18 Summer Show. We are your hosts, Jim
and Jamie Shields. We're here to help you bring family back.
In the last decade, we've helped thousands of families create the family life that you have always wanted.
We give you simple solutions on how you can ignite your family life and succeed in both business and at home.
And please remember, time is of the essence. You only have 18 summers to truly connect with your children.
So let us help you make the most of it.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, Jim back here. Jamie is in four school with the little ones this morning, but I am here this morning with my good friend, Ken Wimberly. We've been in different business mastermind groups together. He had a big family celebration at his house in Texas when I was out there teaching with Jamie and our whole family. They hosted us right before COVID. And so obviously it's been a big ride through there. He's a successful entrepreneur, real estate investor, and developed an app called Legacy of Love, which I'm super excited about because I know what it's doing to help families. So Ken, thank you for being here. Good to see you.
Thanks so much for having me. I love any time we can get together and spend some time together.
Yeah, me too, bud. And you know, it's weird. As we got on to catch up real quick before this happened, I was at your house 6 weeks before COVID in Texas, RVing around, having a good time with the family. And then there's no way we could have known, standing in your living room chatting that night, that what was going to come down the pipe.
Crazy how the world has changed in a short amount of time in such drastic ways.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's good to see, you know, obviously you're one of my friends that I know whose whole family had COVID and came through the other side, which is always, you know, obviously I was one of your biggest cheerleaders when I got the news, but it's great to see all you guys have recovered and are moving forward at this point.
We were very fortunate that, you know, the older kids, Grace and Knox, they were asymptomatic. They both tested positive. They'd gone to a camp. So we knew there was a risk when they went to camp, but we also wanted them to have the experience. And so lots of the campers came back, tested positive. Many of them were asymptomatic, including Grace and Knox. And then Kai, at 4 years old, had one day of symptoms. And Amber and I had it a couple of weeks. Really about 10 days for the symptoms. We quarantined for 2 weeks. After 10 days, we felt really back to normal. So we were grateful that that was it.
Well, I'm glad for you, because I know you were saying too, you've had friends that go longer, but definitely glad to see you guys went through it, came out of it, and now you're continuing to do the work that we're here to talk about today.
Yes, sir.
And that is Legacy of Love. I want you to tell everybody, what is Legacy of Love, and how did you come up with this app? And I know what it's doing for families already. You know, you've taught me a lot of different things. Just before we got on, you gave me something that I'm going to be getting a gift for my wife. So, but tell us about Legacy of Love and how it came about.
Yeah, Legacy of Love is the result of a 17-year journey that I've had with my children. And it started with really two things happened to me way back as I was just having children. So now I have Grace, who's 17, and Knox is 16. And when Grace was just 1 year old and Knox was still in the womb, I went to see a friend of mine who was my attorney. And as I went into his office, he said, Ken, he said, I know you got a baby now and one on the way. He said, let me tell you what I do for my children. He had two elementary school boys at the time. And they shot a lot of video in their family. And at the end of each year, he would splice together 1 minute of video per month for each of his boys, put it on a DVD, put a music track to it, and give it to each child as a This Is Your Life in 2003 type situation. And I thought, wow, that was the most amazing idea I'd ever heard. But number one, I didn't own a video camera. It's 2003, way prior to iPhones and ubiquitous, you know, cameras everywhere. And number two, I didn't know how to edit video. I still don't know how to edit video. I mean, so that probably wasn't going to be my thing, but it got me thinking, you know, what could I do? And around that same time, I received a gift on my birthday, and the gift came from my stepmom, Donna. And she gave me this beautiful, huge leather bound scrapbook that told the story of my life. I opened up the scrapbook, and the first picture on that page was my little squinchy face with a hospital bracelet on shortly after I was born. And then it went on to chronicle my life through kind of early childhood, adolescence, my teenage years, and my time at military school, and through my college graduation, and then marriage and birth of my first child. And it was such a thoughtful, beautiful gift that I cried when I received it, because I just thought all the time that it must have taken her to put that together and write stories in the margin, put dates on the photos so that I could kind of know how old I was during that period of time. It was absolutely amazing. So those two things together, and I wasn't a scrapbooker. So I'm like, scrapbooking is probably not my thing. Video is probably not my thing. What could I do? And what I decided that I could do is I could write down the stories of my life, write down the stories of my kids' life. And that's what I started. I made a commitment back in 2003 to slow down at least once per month and journal to my children about the stories of our lives. And I started that. And I kept up with it month over month, year over year. And that resulted in hundreds of journal entries that I would make and stories that we told. And eventually I did it in a simple Word document is what I did. And eventually I figured out, oh, you can put photos in a Word document. So I started adding some photos into it. And then I would tell more and more parents about this as the years went on. And many parents started journaling to their own children and they'd send me texts of their journal entries. And I was so frankly, still get so rewarded by that kind of thing. And eventually people are like, Ken, you should actually do something with that, right? You should create something. And I started thinking about that way back in like 2012. In fact, I've read old journal entries to my children where I talked in 2012 about, oh, I'm going to, you know, launch this program and help other parents do the same thing that I'm doing. Timing was not right in 2012. It took me all the way until 2018 to have that kind of bandwidth freed up. And so end of 2018, I made a commitment and started the endeavor to create Legacy of Love, which is now a live, active, cross-platform app that parents and grandparents can capture moments, memories, lessons, and document it all with photos, videos, audio files. You can save your voicemails in there. All that you can pass on to future generations so that the story of your family and the story of your children and the story of your life can be passed on to future generations.
It's such a good concept and so important for people like me who don't have good detail, because I want to do those things. And, you know, I'm good at my quarterly meetings with my children. You know, that's how you and I got to know, my board meeting strategy and weekly date night and rhythms. But I'm not very good at the writing things. I'll write something, but it's more sporadically. And Jamie and I have talked about coming on, because I know thousands of people are working with you already. But I need, like I'm sure a lot of the people, because we work with a lot of entrepreneur families. A lot of entrepreneurs are very quick start. They're, you know, running this way and that way. It's just the way we're wired. Yes. And to keep these details is very tough. But when you have some place to go, that's what I love about the simplicity of what you're doing. So we've been talking about it. I mean, now it's like when you get in your face, I'm like, all right, we got to download Ken's thing, damn it, and just start doing it. Because I don't have that organization. I have reflections for the days I spend with my children every quarter, but not that kind of thing where there's these in-between things. And I've never met, not once, Ken, anyone that's documented a part of their life and looked back. I've never met anyone going, well, that was a waste of time. Oh, I wish I didn't do that. I mean, it was the opposite. Like the one thing I was pretty good about writing and documenting was the, and I've kept journals, but I really documented the when I donated a kidney to my father, and I wrote about it. I didn't want to write about it. And that's one of the things that I pat myself on the back for. I'm like, I'm so glad I did this for me and my dad and for my kids, for them to read it. You know, the older teen boys will get it, but the toddler someday, they're going to be able to understand, well, wow, this was a major event.
And I bet when you wrote about it, you were in the moment and all of the emotions, all of the detail was there. If you went to go write about it today, years later, there would be little things that you would miss that you had there in the moment.
Yeah, you think you remember. And that's what I found, that kind of like a trigger. Like right now, if I tried to explain to you, you know, something from 5 years ago, I would fuzzy the details. But if I've written a few of the details down and I go back to them, it re-triggers such clarity. Have you noticed that when you do that? I've seen it where that's where I'd have a few reflection pieces for the boys after a meeting with them. If I document it, even just a four sentence paragraph, boom, it all comes back. But if I try to relate it in my head, forget it. Doesn't work.
Yeah, this is the most powerful part of this process, of our app, of doing this kind of thing. So some of my favorite entries are frankly the board meetings I've had with my kids. And same thing, I go back and I'll look over kind of the history of these board meetings and I'm like, okay, yeah, I did this, I did that. But when I go back and read the entries, and it reminds me of the specific things we did on there and where we went to eat afterwards and what we talked about, it brings back just the flood of the deep memory and the emotion and the connection that we had together.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. It's very powerful. It's very powerful. How do people start on something like this, like the app that you have? Because starting is always the toughest part. So when you tell people, all right, I'm going to start to, and they get your app, what's the best way to just start?
I tell people that what I told myself so long ago, start by making a simple commitment, right? And that commitment for me was once per month. I can commit once a month to write down a quick little story.
Yeah.
And I say, start a commitment and then start by writing your first story. The power of doing it will get us into appreciating it and getting the endorphin release and the dopamine release right there to go, wow, this was actually great. And so start by writing that first story and then committing, okay, at least once a month. And we built reminder features into the app that people can choose how frequently they'd like to be reminded and to go journal again. And says, hey, Ken, you haven't journaled the Knox in the last 3 weeks. Would you like to make an entry?
And I love that accountability. That's where most people need it. They need a little structure and a little accountability. And that's what you've come up with.
We all do.
So start with one story and then try to go once a month. I love that because that's digestible. That's not, you need to commit a half hour a day to this and that, and you're going to start organizing pictures. That's for people. And I love how
That's overwhelm. And that's just way too much for people to think of. And it was too much for me to think of.
Yeah.
Once a month, super digestible. And it's crazy that over the years, there's hundreds and hundreds of stories that tell your history. And for people that have older children that say, oh, I'm too late, I say, no, you are absolutely not too late, because here's what I've noticed. We have quite a few folks using our program to tell the story of their lives. They've got grown children. They're like, you know, but my children didn't know this about me. They didn't know about my best friend. They didn't know about my friend I lost in the service. They didn't know about this. And they start telling their own stories and leaving those stories. When they're gone, that's that family history that is most treasured, right? We lose a parent or a grandparent. Like, why didn't I ask them more about their childhood or more about the love of their life or more about what really helped them to get them through this tough time? And this is a way for us to just slow down and write those stories out for those folks.
I love that. It's so, and you're right, it's generational. My father's dad died when he was 6 years old. He found old journals of my grandfather, you know, journaling the end of World War I, getting gassed in France, going back to Ireland. And it chronicled this man. And then I got to read about it. Someone that my dad barely met, but then I got to know and I got to read about his struggles. And there's some sort of grounding when you get to hear about the struggles of your generational relatives. So it's, yeah, I love this. I can only imagine how much more people are going to have a feel of themselves as they start to do this, because this just wasn't done in an organization, in an organized way. So I think that the shock waves are going to be tremendous, and not that things will be perfect. And that's what you and I talk about. It's not going to create perfection, but it's going to create a better grounding and understanding.
And I write about a lot of things that are not perfect. Parenting is an imperfect sport. Okay.
It sure is. I always say there is no perfect family. Anyone who tells you that there is lying or selling something. There's no perfect family either. What do you think the toughest part about being a dad is? What's the toughest part about being a father?
So I have older kids now at 16 and 17. Someone told me when my children were little and I would be complaining about whatever little kids do. They kind of laughed at me. They said, little kids, little problems. Big kids, big problems.
Yeah.
I think the toughest thing as a parent is letting our children make the mistakes that they need to make.
Yeah.
And not diving in to fix them. And there's certain things that I want to fix immediately. And I also know that there's a path we all need to follow. And we haven't experienced heartache yet. And I think that's going to be, I mean, deep heartache from loss of first love. And so I haven't experienced that with either of my children yet. And I think that's going to be one of the hardest things to go through as a father.
Because what I've certainly
realized is that my children's pain is amplified through me. Anytime they experience pain, whether it's physical pain, you know, if something, I have a buddy of mine that lost a finger when he was a little kid. And just recently, one of my kids was asking me, yeah, how did he lose his finger? And I was just thinking about the pain of his father or mother when he lost that finger, right? Oh, it would have been so just magnified.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the toughest things is letting them go through the life and life's lessons that they need to go through sometimes.
Letting them fall, right? Letting them fall because you know, we can guide, but we cannot completely navigate. That's just, and that wouldn't work anyway.
Our job is to be an example, a guide, a kind of pathway for them. But it's where the bumper lanes and the kind of bowling alley right there, that's our kind of guide to keep them somewhere right there.
And when a kid falls, what do you do? I know I have my own things where the teens fall. Like, what do you do when your kid falls off the line? Something happens that they're discouraged about, something they get in trouble about. What's kind of your overall take on that? I mean, you've worked with tons of families now and also your own family, which is, I think, the best learning ground. But how do you handle when a kid falls off the line, gets in trouble, fails at something? What's your kind of out?
Boy, I seek first to understand. And I think that's an important thing. So whether it's, you know, they failed at something, they got in trouble, they made a mistake, they made a really bad decision. The first thing I'm trying to do is figure out, okay, why did that happen? What caused it? And I continue to come with love and care and candor. While at the same time, there's boundaries, there's rules that we kind of set and follow. And I love you, right? There's these rules and I love you. I always want my children to understand that no matter what, I will love them. And there are, it's that kind of, there's both, right? We've got our rules, the way we lead our lives, the way the example that I choose to set as a father, I get if they fall off of that path, and I'll love them no matter what, while at the same time, keeping our own boundaries.
Sure. Yeah, I always say that just because there's consequence doesn't mean love has been taken away. But it's almost like the reason that there is consequence is because I do love you. And that's been a major thing where, you know, 11 and 12, or even now getting up to 17, 18, they don't want to admit it, but they see it. I see it with myself. You know what I mean? I think that's been a problem today where I think that, well, if I show that consequence, I don't love them. And I challenge parents to say, I think it's the opposite. I think you're not really showing you love them if you don't give consequence.
100%. It may feel easier not to have a consequence right there. It may feel like, oh, I'm doing my part. And I'm with you 100%. The love in you is what helps you to set those boundaries and to enforce the rules and to have and make the consequences.
Love that. Such a simple principle, but it's getting overlooked now. I think one of the best things we can do for our kids is still hold them accountable. You know, even when there was COVID schooling, our rule was let's eat the frog. We're not sleeping until 11, even though we're tired teens. Like, we're going to get up because, you know, it'll be harder as the afternoon goes on. Let's get up, eat that frog. You're done with school in a few hours. And then, you know, we were lucky. We still had our private beach. You guys can get out on the beach. You can do this. But we held that. And I think that helped hold us together, that consequence. So we have some great talks, Ken. I'm going to switch to, you know, kind of our biggest question that we always ask. We're starting to compile them now. And it really came about from the pandemic because I kept asking myself, what would my 75-year-old self tell me right now? We always say, what would you say to your 21-year-old self? Well, we feel so wise now, me sitting here in my mid-40s, you know, the 21. But now here in my mid-40s, dealing with some, you know, big pressures of pandemics and different businesses, and what would my 75-year-old self say to me? Can I imagine that? And the wisdom I got through the pandemic when I kept asking myself was interesting because I kind of like what you said, where people said, oh, small kids, small problems. I started to be hearing my 75-year-old self say, you have in your house toddler meltdowns and teen grumpiness. You know how lucky you are? That doesn't last forever. That's the good stuff. Like, eat that up. It's not there forever. You sometimes, you know, the days are long, the years are short. Like, eat it up. And I really started to take on that attitude where my Leland, you know, said, you've been so happy through this pandemic. It's weird. So he meant not like disrespectful to all the pain that was happening, but I was jolly. I was literally joyful. And that was something that I got directed from, you know.
What a beautiful thing to hear.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's the best compliment you've ever given me.
100%.
That's been so happy through this, you know, thing. And I said, well, yeah, because I've handled other setbacks in my life where I was not, and it made it worse. And like I told you, my business has gone through the roof through this period. I feel very blessed and lucky, but I also know that had something to do with kind of looking at a bigger and a wiser picture. And that's why I always ask that question, because I love to hear, you know, Ken's still young, fit, doing mutters, having a good time. So we're talking years out, 75-year-old Ken. But he's going to be probably wiser, you know, still handsome, you know, still fun. But what advice do you think that 75-year-old Ken would give to Ken today?
You know, I think a big part would be that to tell me and let me know that you have the light inside of you and to let that love light shine. And, you know, one of the things I mean by that is, while I may come across as confident and, you know, I know my wife looks at me like, oh God, here he comes again. But inside, I have a lot of self-doubt, a lot of concern that, you know, I don't understand this business enough, or I don't understand my journey as a father. And there's just a lot of internal, I feel, and I've talked to a lot of other folks that have a similar feeling right there. You may come across strong.
Me, a lot of them, yeah.
And I have a ton of internal self-doubt on a relatively frequent basis. And I think my 75-year-old self would say, let go. Let go of that. You have everything you need inside of you. And believe in it, and you'll find the way.
Such good advice. Not easy to follow, but it makes perfect sense when you hear it. And it's something that, I mean, right there, if you can impart that lesson onto your kids, you know, at 20 opposed to 46.
49.
Yeah, so we each get it, which you look like you're 39, you pain in the ass. Look at you, you're not even aging. So, but but seriously, I love that lesson. So we'll be writing that one in our journal of 75-year-old selves, because I can learn from that. So where can people learn more about Legacy of Love? Because I want to make sure they know about your stuff.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, please come check us out. Our website is legacyoflove.app. Legacyoflove.app. We're on the Apple App Store and on the Google Play Store, both right there. Our Instagram page is Legacy of Love App. And so kind of come check us out there, and you can find me at ken.wimberly on Instagram as well. Kind of my preferred platform to play on these days.
Well, I am a big fan. It's time for us to get on Legacy of Love, because Jamie and I have talked about that. We'll be getting on, and now with gift ideas, Ken gives good gift ideas too. And I'm only going to leave it at that. And you can learn more about that in his stuff, because I just found something for Jamie, and hopefully she doesn't listen to this interview until after it arrives, but I will be sending that to her. My man, it's always good talking to you, always good seeing you. Thank you for inviting me into your home, you know, with your whole family, sharing ideas back and forth to help families, you know, and I want to continue to see you shine with Legacy of Love and all the things you're working on. You can count on us to support you.
Thank you so much. And we'd love to get you and your beautiful family back into Texas anytime you can make it back.
We'll see. It's not out of the agenda. It just got a little slowed down with COVID. We're glad we got to see you before all that happened. So we'll make it happen. In the meantime, always here for you and wish you the best, and want to continue to see Legacy of Love do well.
Thanks so much, my friend. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Ken.